Hey, I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer, and you're listening to the Vermont Edition Podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. If you are a hardcore winter sports enthusiast, you already know this, but a couple of Vermont ski and snowboarding resorts are already up and running, at least partially running, here in mid-November, in the dearth of snow aside. Another flurry of ski areas will be opening in the next few days in time to capture Thanksgiving week traffic. But think back to the end of last season and the news of several Vermont resorts changing ownership hands and some questions those sales raised about season passes, connections to Western ski resorts, and what's happening with consolidation. Then there are other issues having an impact on the ski business as well. Climate change, of course, but also demographic shifts. Are young people skiing and riding the same way their parents do, or at least did before their knees started bugging them? We're going to talk about all of that today, and I'm joined by Karen Lawrence, a freelance writer in Shrewsbury who covers the ski industry and has authored multiple books on skiing. Hi, Karen. Nice to have you with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined in the studio by Adam Howard, president and CEO of Height of Land Publications, based in Jeffersonville, which produces backcountry, cross-country skier, and alpinist magazines. He's also covered the ski industry as a writer. Adam, it's nice to have you on the show as well.
It's nice to be here.
Karen, can you just tick through some of the sales and remind us of the shifting ownership landscape in Vermont ski resorts?
Stowe was sold, as probably people know, to Vail Resorts. And the big change there at Stowe this year was the offering of Vail Resorts' Epic Season Pass. And if you bought an adult Epic Pass this past spring, it was half the cost of the previous full Stowe Pass. So obviously, people who are loyalists at Stowe are benefiting from that. And it comes with the perk of unlimited access to 14 other areas that Vail Resorts in Colorado owns in Colorado, Utah, Lake Tahoe, Midwest, Canada, Australia. And so this is really quite a competitive pass, but I just got it ascertained yesterday because I've never seen this before. Those 2017-18 Epic Passes are not going to be sold after Sunday, November 19th.
Ooh.
So that's huge because it really makes people commit. You'll be able to get day tickets and go skiing at Stowe. But that's really the major change there.
Good. Okay. And I want to talk more about the season passes and how that all fits together in a minute so that we can look at, you know, the Epic Pass versus the Max Pass and all the rest. But before we get into that, there were other sales, too. So in terms of ownership changing hands in Vermont resorts?
Okay. At Stratton, a company called KSL and the Henry Crown Company, they partnered together to purchase Stratton. And I talked with Myra Foster, the public relations person there, and she said they are definitely honoring the Max and Max add-ons and the new passes they introduced last spring. And she said, as far as changes, that we'll see maybe some enhancements like a new lift or a hotel in the future, but anything like that will occur only after they study the area, you know, see what the guests would like. She said they make improvements there based on guest needs and, you know, to enhance the overall experience. So, you know, this year we're seeing a new music series and snowcat dinners, but it's basically business as usual. I mean, the same people are operating the area. So, you know, when it comes to those two owners, I don't really see any it affecting most skiers and riders in Vermont because each area has their own niche, their own people who own vacation homes or put down roots in an area. So I think the real winners are skiers who might get those multi-resort passes.
All right. So in terms of Stowe and Stratton, we're seeing some changes there and some very large companies that are in control now. And you know, that brings up questions of consolidation. But then we can also look at Bolton Valley, which has gone back to the original family who founded it and had operated it in the past. They now own it again. So, Adam, when you look at the landscape, is the industry consolidating? Are we seeing, you know, Western resorts really trying to come in and capture the Vermont market? Or, you know, is this just three separate examples that we should take on their own merits?
I think what we're seeing in Vermont is something we're seeing worldwide, and that is that overall skier days are in decline because we are not replacing the baby boomers who are aging out of the sport at the rate at which they're aging out. And so when the pie is not growing in any market, you're going to see consolidation as a way for some of the bigger players to, A, give smaller players an opportunity to get out, and B, take a bigger slice of that shrinking pie. And I think that's what we're seeing here in Vermont.
So there is consolidation, and you know, that's sort of a natural part of the business
worldwide
trajectory.
Absolutely.
But doesn't that then impact not just smaller players having a chance to get out of the business, but perhaps smaller players feeling like the economy of scale isn't there for them? You know, if what Karen was talking about with season pass finances changing, then, you know, a smaller resort may not be able to compete, although often those smaller independent ones are cheaper to begin with. So, you know, what does that all mean?
Well, at the end of the day, it's all about the experience. And if you liken the ski industry to, say, the beer industry, you're seeing a lot of consolidation with major breweries around the world. But what's really getting all the headlines and really bringing a lot of the value to the consumer, it's the craft brewers. And I would liken the small Mad Rivers, Smuggler's Notches, Sugarbushes, and, you know, all the resorts in Vermont are small, but they all have such unique character that regardless of who owns them, as long as it's preserved, they'll still do okay if we get some snow.
I mentioned a moment ago that the original family who had founded Bolton Valley is in control again. And Ralph DeLaurier is the chair of Bolton Valley, and he is part of that family, and he joins us now on the phone. He's calling in. Hi, Ralph. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. How are you doing?
Well, thanks. So you're obviously, you know, keyed into this conversation. What are you hearing?
Well, you know, Bolton is really where a lot of Vermonters ski. And that's really our emphasis, to keep it for Vermonters. But we've put some exciting new programs in. I mean, I'm in it with some local partners and three of my children, Lindsay, Evan, and Adam. And we're also getting – and Adam, of course, has skied all over the world and been in many films. And he's leading up our backcountries program. So, you know, we think local's good. We try to keep it affordable. We've got 2,000 kids a week in our after-school program. We're continuing that. But we're going with backcountry, which I think Bolton's really well known for, without boring you with the details. But we do have the highest base elevation in the east, and this backcountry skiing, Bolton's famous for it. So Adam's heading up that program. We've got the ability of taking up the wilderness lift. We're putting in a new rental fleet with Dynafit gear, and Adam will be leading tours into the backcountry, which is really exciting, which starts by going up the wilderness lift, then going over into Mount Mansfield State Forest, which is the other side of our valley now.
So it sounds like, Ralph, you're really, you know, doubling down on this idea of backcountry skiing and adventure. But Adam Howard was just telling us, you know, that's all the whole industry obviously is dependent on snow and weather. But isn't backcountry even more so backcountry skiing? Because you're not going to have all of your snowmaking equipment necessarily in all the backcountry areas. So how are you negotiating that?
We start at 2,100 feet, and most of our backcountry skiing is up around 3,000 feet, and every 200 feet of vertical is 1 degree. And so if our base area is 700 feet higher than other base areas, that's 3 or 4 degrees. That helps with natural snow. It's a real bowl. So we can do that. But certainly snowmaking is a big part of it. We've got a bunch of new high-energy efficiency guns this year. We've rearranged it so we can get our timberline open earlier. I mean, that's certainly an important part. But our high base, the fact that we're close to Burlington and Montpelier, that in our season pass sales are actually up this year, and I know that there's been a decline, but we've had a 10% increase in season passes over last year, which was a pretty good season pass year.
Well, Ralph, I'm glad you called in, and it's nice to hear from you, and Ralph, really bullish on this coming season, although I suppose you have to be, Ralph, but I appreciate talking with you. Thanks very much. Listeners, if you also own a ski resort and want to call in, we'd welcome your call, 800-639-2211, or if you just happen to like to ski and ride, you can also share your thoughts, and you can also post them on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Adam Howard, is that idea of sort of moving more into backcountry and adventure, the way Ralph Deloria is talking about, something that you're seeing at other resorts? I mean, we always see skiers who get lost by going off-piste when they shouldn't be, but, you know, here's Bolton saying we're working on that whole side of the industry.
Well, there's a big movement in Vermont around backcountry skiing, not just outside of resort boundaries, but in dedicated areas. The state's done an incredible job, both since the Shremlin administration and through the Scott administration, and really fostering that, which is super exciting, obviously, for our business. But, you know, I think, again, we're talking about providing an experience, and you have to go to where the customers are. If you're a resort operator, and every ski area has some sort of answer to, or should, in my view, have some sort of answer to the backcountry question. And let's remember that we're not just talking about skiing out of bounds, skiing in the woods, adventure skiing. You know, we're seeing a huge uptick in people that want to skin in bounds, that want to put those Dynafit bindings that Ralph was talking about on and skin up the mountain.
You're going to have to explain that. For people who are not skiers, you're skinning up, you're not taking a chairlift, right? You're
exactly.
Getting up there on your own
So backcountry skiing is about using your own power to get to the top of the mountain and then skiing down, and that requires some specialty gear, some really light skis, boots, and bindings with a skin that you put on the bottom of the ski that you can take off when you get to the top. The binding needs to be able to essentially get into a tour mode. Dynafit bindings are a brand of that type of product. But, you know, and again, so we're seeing a lot of people that want to skin on the piste, on the groomers, and get up to the top and ski down for exercise or just to, because they work all day, they want to do it after hours or before hours. And most ski areas in the state have an answer to that. Some are better than others. But it's just a part of the bigger experience. Like, it's like being able to cross-country ski or snowshoe or snowboard or ski. You know, you kind of have to have an answer to all of those things. And Ralph clearly understands the sport. He and his family have been leaders in the sport for many, many years. And they get it. I'm super excited about what they're going to do there.
Let's go to Steve, who's calling in from Windsor. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you loud and clear.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah, just returning. Actually, just stepped into my house from a morning out of chemo. Great skiing this morning. Just incredible conditions for the time of year. I guess it's their earliest opening here in 5 years. I have a couple questions, and I think Ralph already answered. I grew up in the Burlington area and remember him from many years ago at Bolton Valley. And he probably remembers, if he's still listening, the little rope tow that was operated by the South Burlington Kiwanis Club right in back of the Sheridan, where he operated a farm for many years. So my question, I guess, is, through consolidation, I mean, here in Windsor now, we are actually revitalizing Mount Ascutney as a skiing area for families and a more affordable alternative. But through consolidation, you know, what's going to happen over the course of many, many years with these ski areas? There's so many lost ski areas of Vermont now. Is that, I think there are 18 ski areas here in Vermont now, if I'm not mistaken. Is that going to dwindle down to 10? I'll take your comments off the air.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for calling, and glad you had a good morning at Okemo. Karen Lawrence, what do you think about Steve's questions?
Jane, back in the 80s, when Bruce Belden retired from Pico, and he put in his detachable chairlift the Golden Express. I asked him why, and he said, I think there's only going to be 10 areas left by the year 2000. Well, we've got 21. We also have Hardack, Northeast Slopes, and Escutney, where locals can learn with surface lifts, and it's relatively inexpensive, and they're dynamite areas. They're community-oriented. They do a great job. They have groomers. They don't necessarily have snowmaking, but I don't think, based on we're 17 years later from 2000, I think that areas that are well-run, that pay attention to efficiency and snowmaking and diversification, there's no question in my mind that they're going to survive. By diversification, I mean, you know, the larger areas have added sports centers, spas, zip lines, canopy tours, coasters, adventure centers, pools, arcades, cross-country trails. Some have uphill on their trails. So they're kind of weatherproofing in a sense, so that if a guest comes for a Christmas week, there's a variety of things to do. But if the weather takes, you know, a little inclement one day, you know, they have something to do. Then the other thing I think is Vermont is the number one ski state in the East. And I talked with the former president of VSAA, the State Ski Areas Association, last winter, and some other people in the industry. And they all agree, you know, Vermont's got that mystique. It's an early state for skiing with lifts. You know, you've got the first rope toe at Woodstock and the development of Suicide Six and Bromley and Pico in the 30s. I honestly feel that the intergenerational skier is going to stay with Vermont. I think the mystique, and each area has its niche. It's got something a little different. Mad River, I just love that base lodge. It's such a throwback to the early days, and it's totally different, and you're not going to find a spa there, but you will find some dynamite skiing. So I see it as different strokes for different folks, and Vermont is really blessed. And, you know, the fact that Escutney's coming back, That tells you right there, we have skiers in our state, people who like the outdoors.
Well, that's a good point, but I want to talk about demographics and this idea of are younger people coming in, and if not, why? Today, we're looking at the business of ski resorts with Adam Howard, who runs the company that publishes Backcountry, Cross-Country Skier, and Alpinist magazines, and with Karen Lawrence, a freelance writer who covers the ski industry and has authored multiple books on skiing. Christine's calling in from Salisbury. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, go right ahead.
So my family, we moved here 14 years ago. We had been living in California and moved in the middle of January. And I was told by somebody to embrace winter here, so we did that. All of us took snowboarding lessons at the Middlebury College Snowball, and it was a wonderful experience, and we're all obsessed snowboarders now. In fact, my son is on the snowboarding team at the University of Vermont. So I just wanted to kind of put a plug in for the Snowball and their lessons. It was great.
Christine, thanks very much. That's where I learned to ski as a kid, too. And not really a skier much anymore, but yeah, I have fond memories of taking my dad down some trails that he did not appreciate at the Snowball. We got a note from Betsy who says, let's hear a shout out for the small community ski areas that dot the state. Cochran's, Linden Outing Club, Hardack, Stratford Ski Toe, Northeast Slopes, and Living Memorial Park come to mind. These are great, affordable family ski areas. And let's go to Rob in Montpelier. Hi, Rob. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Rob Cohen. I just want to make a comment. I think I heard the commentary earlier in the show about the new passes at Stowe, and I've had a pass there the last couple of years, and I opted out this year. I think that they sold too many passes, and it's really going to change kind of maybe devalue my pass in a way. I took advantage of those, you know, 20s and 30s passes that have come out to encourage younger skiers to come out and get a better deal. So I just think there's going to be, they stole too many passes. It's going to be crowded.
So, Rob, you sort of preemptively said, yeah, not this year, I'm not doing it?
Well, I got a pass at Sugar Bush, which may be the same, but I think that Stowe's going to be a lot more crowded this year than it was the last 2 years because of the greater number of passes. And I'd love to know the increase in the number. I don't think I've heard that anywhere as far as how many more they sold at the newer price.
Rob, thanks for your call. Karen, you were talking about that earlier, how many were sold at Stowe because people can get the Epic Pass, which I guess allows you to also ski at some Western resorts if you're going to be doing both this season.
Yeah, I don't have any numbers. Usually areas, you know, they'll tell you if they're up or down, but they don't share that information in general. And, you know, I just have this inclination to say, I thought he raised a good point. The multi-mountain passes, which is what an Epic is, that actually drove the Max Pass years ago because there are big other conglomerates, okay, that are competitors to Vail Resorts, and they came up with 5 days at each ski area partners. In other words, they weren't owned by the same company. And today, a couple of years later, they're up to 44 areas in North America. There's four of them in Vermont, Killington, Pico, Okemo, and Stratton, that are on the Max Pass. So you can ski 5 days at each area. That's a lot of ski days. And there's also an add-on that you can add. So if you have a season pass to one of the partner areas like Pico, you can add on for less money than the cost of a full Max Pass, and now you can ski at 43 other areas because Pico's included. So it'll be interesting to see if with that kind of competition, and as far as I know, last year Bolton Valley joined together with Magic Mountain, and then they joined with another area, I think, in New York. So they had a special pass where you could try each other's area. So the caller raised a good point. I don't ski Stowe on a regular basis. But I do know they're adding more shuttle buses on weekends this year. So he may be right. He may be right.
On that question of cost, we've gotten some comments from listeners. Colleen says, as a lifelong skier and boarder, one thing that makes it challenging to stay in the sport or to get into the sport is cost. In Colorado, there are multi-mountain season pass options that allow people to ski a wide variety of areas for a reasonable price. Stowe's part of the Epic Pass, but the only ski resort in the East is Stowe. Every other ski area that's included in the pass is out West. Great if you have the money to travel, but not great for people who ski in Vermont or even throughout New England. Looks like the Max Pass could be a great option for Colleen to be able to ski various resorts in Vermont and in the region. Lewis posted about that, saying the industry does have challenges, and one of them that is driving away the middle class. A young family with two kids either has a season pass or spends a prohibitive amount to get the family on the slopes. The advent of the Max Pass and others is a positive development, and I hope it continues. Adam, are you seeing this question of passes and resorts that have no ownership collaboration are actually doing more collaboration on these passes so people can ski more than one place on the East Coast?
You know, what I'm seeing, and there's another opportunity out here, and that's Mountain Collective. It's kind of like the Max Pass. It's made up of a bunch of independent mountains, including Aspen and all of their affiliates, which has grown a lot to try to compete with Vail. I'm not actually sure what the particular intermountain co-ops that are happening in Vermont are today, but I can tell you that my friends at Sugarbush, my friends at Smugglers, Bolton and Jay were all like very concerned when Vail bought Smugs about the Epic Pass and what it could do to their season's pass sales. And frankly, they've been delighted that their passes are actually up this year. Their pass sales from everyone I've talked to are up. And I think your caller from earlier might represent a bit of a movement there.
You mean in saying I'm not going to go to Stowe because I'm worried it's going to be too crowded and going to those other passes?
Well, I mean, it's no secret that Stowe is already pretty crowded with a $1,200 pass. The mountain road can be a nightmare at times. And when you add to it the traffic that you might see with the Epic Pass, I think a lot of people really did a gut check there. So that could be a short-term thing. We'll only find out after this winter, right?
Yeah. Let's go to Ellen, who's calling in from Stratton. Hi, Ellen. Your thoughts.
Hi, this is Ellen. I'm at Mountain Realty at Stratton, and I just wanted to say that as far as, like, the industry shrinking, we are finding that just as many people are coming up and buying homes and skiing because they had such a wonderful experience growing up. They want their kids to have the same experience, and even though they may have left for a couple of years, they're back again, and people are always bringing their kids and trying to give them the same experience to get away from technology and enjoy the skiing. So I'm really optimistic about that, that Vermont is always going to be a place in someone's heart if they spent any time here, and the family time is so important.
Ellen, thanks for calling in, and glad to hear your experience. You know, and Ellen also brings up the point that there are lots of associated industries that are really relying on the ski industry and the success of the ski industry to thrive as well. But Karen, what about this idea of people getting into the sport? So Ellen's saying, I'm still seeing families bringing their kids up, coming to Vermont, teaching them how to ski and ride. But we were hearing from Adam earlier, you know, this demographic shift is happening. What are you seeing?
I'm seeing lots of programs to address both the demographic shift and the expense. We have all kinds of programs, and they vary from area to area, but Ski Vermont, which is the state's trade association, they have a Take 3 beginner package. So a newcomer can take 3 beginner ski or snowboard lessons for a price of $129. So that's 3 different days. And that package includes the rentals, the lift ticket to the beginner area, and a professional lesson, which, you know, I think if my math is correct, it's, what, $43 a day. Ski Vermont also has is part of the National January Learn to Month, and that when I say learn to, it's ski and snowboard. It's for a beginner, never ever I call them, or a first timer, $49. Again, the same lift ticket, professional lesson, and rental. But then there are some real incentive learning programs at different areas. Killington started one called the Discovery Program, and they expanded it. You pay for a 4-day package, and you don't have to take them consecutive days. So they're addressing the baby boomer, the millennials' crazy schedule today. But at the end of the 3rd day, they give you brand new skis or snowboard, either a Lon skis or a Burton snowboard, free. And now on the 4th day, you are on your new equipment. So, and each area has its own special programs. I mean, it's they're not the only one. Sugarbush has a, let's see, first timer to lifetimer, if I'm remembering it correctly. And at the end of their lesson package, you get a season pass for the rest of the season. So I think the industry is doing a fabulous job. Now, it's not just season passes and equipment. But yesterday, Bromley announced it has a new airline-style variable lift ticket pricing for skiers and riders. So if you plan ahead and you know how it is when you buy an airline ticket, it's cheaper way ahead than it is the week before. So you can save 30 to 50%. So that addresses the cost as well as the learning. And those are just samples. I mean, there's a 5th grade passport program, not just for Vermonters, but for people out of state. And for a $10 processing fee, a 5th grader can get up to 88 days of free skiing and riding at alpine resorts and cross-country resorts. So you can snowshoe or cross-country. We have a lot of Nordic resorts in Vermont. So, you know, I'm fond of saying where there's a will, there's a way. And the callers mentioned some of the other areas. I have grandchildren up in South Burlington. One learned to ski in the Cochran's Taught program, where Barbara Cochran taught parents how to teach their kids. Then they went to Bolton Valley, and her little brother got on skis. And then the next year, last year, they were at Smug's, and they got a Bash card, which brought down their cost of skiing because they don't have the time to ski enough to get a season pass. This year, they're back to Bolton Valley because all her friends go to Bolton Valley. It's definitely a Vermonter's place.
Well, so Karen's saying, you know, here are all these opportunities, but Adam, are people actually taking advantage of them in the numbers that the industry needs to be able to be sustainable into the future?
That's a good question. I think that in Vermont, we have to look at it in two ways. There's two drivers for the ski industry, and that is Vermont residents who ski and guests who come in from out of state. All the small hills, Hardack, Bolton, Cochran's, Northeast Slopes, those feeder mountains that used to be in everybody's town and backyard, they still exist to some degree in Vermont, but they exist to a very much smaller degree in Massachusetts, in New York, in Connecticut, Rhode Island, you name it, Ohio. And we're not making new skiers at that real grassroots level outside of Vermont. And that's the ski industry's real bear, is to solve that. We can solve it in Vermont because we're a mountain state. We get it. But it's doing that hard work outside of the state that's the real difficulty, I think, at this time. And how we solve that, that's a tough one.
Do you think we can?
I don't know.
There's an honest answer. Adam Howard runs the company that publishes backcountry, cross-country skier, alpinist. It's called Height of Land Publications. He's the CEO and president. Adam, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Karen Lorenz is a freelance writer in Shrewsbury who covers the ski industry, has authored multiple books on skiing, working on another one, a historical look at the Vermont ski industry. Karen, thank you so much for being with us.
Nice to be with you.